What is going on? This is the Ethos Clippers podcast coming at you here on Sunday evening after the Los Angeles Clippers beat the Charlotte Hornets by a score of 130 to 118, an offensive slugfest between a Clippers team destined for the playoffs and a Hornets team, not so much, but nice to get a win, especially after that nail-biter against the Magic a couple days prior where the Clippers won by three. I am your host, Brandon Marcus, joined by not my co-host, joined by someone that we have not had on the podcast in nearly 2 years, and I don't know whether it's because he's become so big time with his own podcast, or because I've got a co-host, or a combination of the two. But either way, it is a friend of the podcast, someone that I've had on several times. You hear him all the time, whether it be on 570 or now on 1150 with the Dodgers preempting the Clippers nowadays. He is the halftime, pregame, postgame voice of the Los Angeles Clippers, and he's on at ClipperPod, Clips and Dip. Adam Oslin, back on the Ethos Clippers podcast. Adam, how are you, my friend?
Clippers fans, Clipper Nation, how the heck are you?
I love it.
Shout out, Matt. I'll try to fill in and do what I can here, but it's good to be back on. It was definitely the latter. Things just haven't worked out recently, but I'm always available. You know I'm a big sports ethos listener, both you guys.
You are, and we appreciate that. Seriously, though, like I know we've been joking around to start, but we really do appreciate you being a loyal listener and sharing the podcast and interacting. But really, though, it's tough to get you on because we seem to record on the same schedule because we don't record right after a game like your friends over at 213 Hoops do. So we record the next day, and that's when you have an off day, and that's usually when you record. So we just haven't had the schedule line up, but because of the 12:30 game, or rather the 3 o'clock game, the Clippers were able to end that one by about 5:30, and here we are recording later at night as you fill in for Matt because he has his wife's baby shower and family in town. So let's talk some Clippers basketball. All right, so where do we want to start? Because you are more of an optimist than I think the two of us have been on this podcast. Nice to see you gasp. Do you disagree or agree?
I mean, I think we're in the same arena. We're in the same realm, the same ballpark. I don't think we're that far away from one another, I'd say.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Well, the Clippers have won three in a row, and they've done so in three games where they were favorites. If you look at the betting odds, I think the Magic game was the closest line. I think it was Clippers by one, and the Clippers won that game by three. The Sixers game, I think, was a six-point favorite, and then in today was obviously double-digit favorite. So three games the Clippers should have won, and they did win, which is nice to see them win these three games. Are you inching a little further away from the edge after these three games, or do you still want to see what the Clippers do this coming week against two tough teams in Sacramento and Denver? Because myself, I'm not buying into anything I've seen the last couple of days, except for the fact that Paul George and Kawhi Leonard look pretty good, which is nice to see. But I think we're still seeing too many issues, whether it be poor defense, whether it be poor offense in stretches, whether it be turnovers, whether it be sloppiness. I'm not getting ahead of myself after winning three games in a row. Where do you stand?
Well, maybe we're further apart than I thought then. Because okay, I did find these victories, these three straight wins, to be meaningful. Because the first two games on this road trip, in Philly, in Orlando, those were the exact type of games they had just been losing. Mm-hmm. Where they get down early in the fourth quarter, and then it breaks the Clippers' will. They were down by four heading into the fourth against the 76ers. Then they were down by nine, and Paul George hit a run, silencing, stopping shot, a three-pointer on the right wing, and really started to steady the ship that way. He ended up with 11 points in the first 7 minutes of that fourth quarter before Kawhi Leonard came back in, and after having a miserable game where he was shooting 3 of 15, had those two and ones, then the block on Kelly Oubre, And by the way, I probably would have been upset if I was a Philadelphia 76ers fan as well. I may not have done what Kelly Oubre did to the officials afterwards, which he tried to walk back immediately after. But it was like, come on, man, the toothpaste is out of the tube. You know you guys are getting fined for this one. You can't do that. They were on the wrong end of it, but the Clippers still battled. I mean, they were down by 5 in the last 5 minutes of those first two games of the road trip, and they found ways to win. And it was Paul George then who was having the off-shooting night in Orlando, where he was, I think, 3-for-13 before knocking down that shot over Jonathan Isaac, one of the better defenders in the league, right after Kawhi Leonard hit the shot over Jalen Suggs. And it just looked to me like, specifically in the Magic game, I felt like, okay, Kawhi Leonard has more bounce, more pop than I've probably seen in a month, which is the way he's moving. And that carried over, I felt like, today into the game against the Charlotte Hornets. But the same thing with PG-13 Paul George. You brought it up. You said, aside from Kawhi and PG looking pretty good, but to me, when they're looking that good, I mean, that's the whole kit and caboodle to some degree. It all starts with 2-1-3. If they're playing that well, if they're moving that well, if they look that healthy, then all of a sudden you have a chance again. And PG-13 goes for a season high, dropping 41 in Charlotte. And it's just the way he's going about it. He looks exactly like peak Paul George with his movement. He does. That shot over Jonathan Isaac was insane. That is one of the tougher game-winning or game-stealing shots of the season. It wasn't Kyrie over Nikola Jokic, I guess, with the left-handed push shot from 15 feet out. But it was special to do that against Jonathan Isaac. And then he carried that over into a great performance with 41 points on taking just 21 shots. Goes for a season high of 8 made three-pointers. And showed out against Brandon Miller, who looked up to him and was like, you know, the guy saying, my idol has become my rival, I guess. Because he was playing really well early on. And then Paul George kicked in and had that 17-point second quarter against Charlotte. Charlotte got really hot from the outside, made things a little bit dicey and interesting late. But to me, it's all about 2-1-3. When they're playing like that, when they can move and look like they're still in their prime, then you have a shot still. Even if you are the 4 seed, which it looks like that's the most likely scenario at this point, they could still drop to 5. But the one good thing coming out of today with the Dallas Mavericks, and I know we'll probably get into it at some point, but them moving up to the 5 spot, well, the Clippers actually have the tiebreaker against them. If you're looking for any positive of Dallas instead of the Pelicans, take your pick, I guess. But I don't know. I'm feeling a little bit more optimistic, I guess, than you right now, Brandon.
Yeah, I think so. And PG with the anti-Deontay Murray, where Murray needed 40-plus shots to get his 40 points or so. PG only with 21. And that's what it helps when you hit 8 shots in a row and you are as good and on as much on fire as he was. And that was a cool moment after the game, of course, when you got a chance to see Paul George exchange jerseys with Brandon Miller, and Miller was asking him, and they were kind of, seemed like it was, he was kind of being shy about it, asking him, and then he's like, are we going to do this? Are we not going to do it? So cool moment. I'll tell you what concerns me, though. What concerns me is the Clippers just won a game against Charlotte by 12 on a night where they shot 57% from the field, they shot 48% from three, and they got to the line 34 times, and they only won by 12. And you might say, only 12, that's a lot, double digits. I don't know, man. When you shoot that well, let's say the Clippers miss two of those threes and they get to the free throw line a couple less times, it's a nail biter in a game that it shouldn't be. And part of that is because the defense. And here we are again, where it really seems like on a night where the Clippers' offense is good, the defense isn't. And we'll go through stretches where the Clippers' defense is good, but the offense isn't. And I haven't really seen them put together that two-way performance that I've really been looking for, where the offense is good and the defense is good. I mean, they give up 23 threes on 52 attempts, 44% clip today. The Hornets shot 50% as a team, and this is a Hornets team that, of course, traded away Terry Rozier, doesn't have LaMelo Ball. Mark Williams is shut down for the season. I mean, you're relying basically on Brandon Miller and Miles Bridges, and then Davis Bertans and Grant Williams do the business off the bench. So this is not like an all-star crew that Charlotte has, and the Clippers allowed them to shoot way too well from the field. And if the Clippers miss a couple of those three-pointers, then all of a sudden it's much closer, and you could easily make the case, yeah, well, if Charlotte misses a couple of those, then it's a blowout, and I get that. But that being said, it just feels like the offense and the defense haven't clicked yet on the same night in a long time, Adam, and that's where my concern is.
That's fair, but the victories in Philly, and you can say they don't have Joel Embiid, but they also just beat the Clippers without him and missing more guys. They had Batum back for that one by 14 back in that back-to-back woeful weekend the Clippers had just a week ago. Those were gritty type of wins that I think are more representative of how playoff games can go often, mm-hmm. where it's more low scoring, where you got to dig it out of the dirt a little bit and find shots here and there and buckets to hit. I don't know if the hot shooting like we saw in Charlotte is as representative of how most playoff games go. And to me, them winning in the fashion they did, where they found their offense when they had to have it most in those first two games of the road trip, that was huge. Now, to your point about the Charlotte Hornets and what happened today, you already made, you know, one of my arguments for me, which is if Charlotte doesn't hit some ridiculous three-pointers like Bertans and Miles Bridges over Kawhi from 30 feet out, it is a blowout. I mean, they were up by 19 early in the fourth. They extended the lead. It looked like it was about to be over, and then Charlotte went into nuclear mode. Now, granted, the Clippers defensively, I don't have much of an argument against that. They're 28th defensively over their last 25 games. That's far from championship stuff. That is post-Grammy road trip where they are 13-12 in their last 25 games. They are 28th defensively. Obviously not good enough. What I will say is there's been two things going on with the Clippers that could flip and seem a little bit fluky. That could change everything. For instance, today, Charlotte goes for at least ties their season high, making 23 three-pointers. They did it against Phoenix this year, too. I don't know if Terry Rozier was there at that time. But teams have been shooting over 40% against the Clippers from three since the Grammy road trip, while the Clippers have been shooting much poorer from the outside since the Grammy road trip. It's going to go up a little bit after what happened today, but they've been around 36, 37% when on the season, I think they're still, as I check right now, they're still third in 3-point shooting. So it tells you when you're first from distance for 50 games throughout the year, you can have this rut that they've been in from the outside and you're still third. So they were that good, that elite from the outside. I think it was real. 50 games is a real sample size. I'm not going to discount 25 games and there being some regression, but it's been pretty severe. And then some of the fluky shooting where you look at wide open threes, and the Clippers since the Grammy road trip are at 34% on wide open threes. Like, that's not defense against them. They're getting the same amount up. They're just missing them. You could say it's tired legs, but I think it's just been kind of fluky shooting going against them, with them being really cold lately and the opposition being really hot, because a ton of those threes from Charlotte, you have no business knocking those down, but it happens sometimes in this league, but it has been happening a lot to the Clippers as of late. I'm not going to say it's nothing defensively what's been happening, but if those two things change, all of a sudden the Clippers are back into God mode on offense, and defensively they're at least middle of the pack and look much better. And those two things are somewhat out of your control when it comes to shooting variance. They need to be better defensively overall. I completely understand that. Coach Lou said post-game, you know, he didn't like the defensive discipline. He wasn't that worried about the three-pointers from Charlotte because there wasn't much you could do about some of them, but he just felt like they didn't execute the game plan that they spoke about pregame. So I'm not going to discount it completely and say it's nothing, Brandon, how bad they've been defensively, but I do think there could be a really quick fix for this team over what's happening the last 3, 4 weeks, 2 months with just fluky, high-variance shooting.
And I think the frustrating part, Adam, is that the fact that we're sitting here on the, and it's April, and we're still saying that the team didn't execute the game plan, and they're still not sure what the identity is. And PG said after the game, you know, we still weren't good enough. We're not there yet. Like, that part is a bit concerning to me. And at some point, you're just not a good perimeter. You don't have a good perimeter defense, which doesn't make a whole lot of sense with this team. I mean, when you look at Mann and Coffey and Kawhi and PG, like, there's no reason why your perimeter defense should be as bad as it is. So it's certainly something that I want to keep an eye on in the final handful of games.
It wasn't for 50 games. They were top 10 in teams, I think, only shooting like 34% from three against them. Now teams are at 37% from three against them. Over the last 25 games, it's gone up to 37% just because they've been so hot. So the majority of the season, they were much better with the perimeter defense, or at least the shooting wasn't going against them in the way it has been lately.
Yeah, and it's no surprise, by the way, the Clippers win a game where PG does well. And I think this is the frustrating part when we see these games from PG where he goes 3 of 13 and he disappears and he has the stupid turnovers, because he can be this guy. Like, I mean, I remember talking to Justin Wilson several times a couple of years ago, and he said the minimum 10 threes per game is what you want to see from PG putting up. And because he's a great three-point shooter, and he puts up a game like today, and you say, yeah, that's the guy that is deserving of the contract he's asking for. But then you go through the stretch before where he hadn't hit 19 points in like 12 of 15 games, and you're saying, who the hell is this guy? And so you wonder if maybe it was health. Who knows? But either way, it's not a surprise the Clippers win a ball game where PG does as well as he does do. Two things I want to bring up with you. And the first one is James Harden. And they released the report, I think it was Christina Pink, said during the game that James Harden got hurt in the pregame warmups. He sprained his finger. He had a splint on his finger. He was just one of three from the field. I'm a little concerned, Adam, because if he's going to be completely useless offensively, that's really, really going to hurt this team on the offensive end, because it's going to allow whoever his defender is to sag off of him. And all of a sudden, you're going to have at least Harden and Zoo on the floor that can't shoot. And that's going to put a lot of pressure on Kawhi and PG. I know he had 10 assists in today's game, but I think it's something that we need to keep an eye on now to see if this is something that hampers the Clippers in the next couple of weeks. Because if this is something serious, Adam, I'm about to call you Matt, then we're in trouble here. Because I just think you need to have Harden at least be respected from three-point range. And he hasn't shot the ball well at all recently. But the fact that this finger thing is popping up is a little bit concerning. Are you concerned or no?
I mean, I'm less concerned by the fact that he actually played through it today and it just happened. Now, he only took three shots. It looked like he didn't want to test it out that much. He only had 6 points. He did have 10 assists to zero turnovers, by the way,
yeah,
which was good to see. I'm concerned overall with James Harden over the last month. That is something I've been keeping a close eye on. He's shooting just 40% from the field in March, just 32% from the outside. And it seems like he has more of those high turnover games against elite defenses and really good opponents that can key in on him. And, you know, they gave him those 2 games off for rest purposes against Chicago and against New Orleans on the road. And there's been a little bit more burst here and there of him getting to the basket, but they have to have that. That is definitely a part of the deal of what makes this Clippers offense go. He did have 10 assists. He did get into the paint sometime or at times in Charlotte, but I think it's necessary for James Harden to be aggressive with his offense because everything else kind of flows off of that. And as much as people talk about, you know, Paul George should be the second best player on this team, well, you can easily make the argument that James Harden is the second most important player because the offense goes through him. He is setting the table. And my point would be, when we gave him so much credit for how this Clippers team was looking and how they were rolling when they went 26-5 for 31 games, when we give so much of the credit to James Harden, them finally having that playmaking point guard, an elite playmaking point guard next to 213, I think when things are starting to go the other way, you also have to look at, okay, is something going on with James Harden? Is the system broken right now? Or is it at least have some cracks in it and just isn't quite right? And I think that's what we've been seeing over the last couple of months. His play has been much more up and down. I think he's had some tired legs. The shoulder injury as well is concerning, that left shoulder injury for him, of course. I think all these things could be affecting him. He's been trying to push through it, but I feel like you got to protect James Harden from himself because he is a guy who wants to always play. That's how most players are, of course. But he has a reputation for playing through injuries, and at some point it could be to the detriment, maybe not for that particular regular season game, but if your ultimate goal is winning a championship, you do need him as fresh and as spry as possible for the playoffs. Now, you don't end up with a play-in, that means you got about 5 to 6 days off. between the end of the regular season and that first game of the first round. And that could do wonders for this team. That's big for them. So obviously they're doing more than treading water the last three games, but they need that for James Harden. They need it for Paul George and Kawhi Leonard too. Overall, I feel like this team just needs to be a little bit more rejuvenated, but positive signs from Kawhi and PG the last three games. Both of them look fantastic movement-wise. James Harden is the one that I'm kind of zeroing in on and saying, what's going on with him? Could he have sat in this ball game against Charlotte? Could they still have won without him? I don't know, because now they're no longer in a position where they can just do fine-tuning and try different lineups. They have to win ball games. It's not just about good process right now. Like, you have to win to stay afloat and not end up not having a home court in the first round of the playoffs.
Yeah, all really good points. And I'm glad you brought up the point about second best player versus second most important player, because we've talked about that in this podcast. And I think all Clippers podcasts have brought it up. And it's a good one. I mean, it's a good point, because we've said here that James Harden, I believe, is the second most important player in how this team is run. And you bring up another great point in that he needs to get some of the blame when things are going poorly. And it's to no surprise that when he's not shooting the basketball well and the offense is struggling a bit, and he's turning it over a tad too much, then he's got to get some of the blame and some of these losses that the Clippers are getting. And hopefully the shoulder is not a big concern, but you bring up a good point that it might be. And the fact he played through the finger injury today is a good sign, but it was definitely concerning to me that he was looking to pass every time he got the ball. And the only couple of shots he took were kind of a, hey, I guess I will take this shot. He was just one of three. He missed a free throw, which doesn't happen very often. So a tad concerning, and we'll see what happens down the stretch. All right, one more player I want to talk to you about, but first, let's take a quick break. All right, so I'm going to bring up a player that you are going to be very pleased that I'm bringing up. And I got to tell you, it is no
not
surprise.
Not if it's Bones Highland.
It is not Bones Highland. It is not Bones. Matt texted me before the show, and he goes, I'll be listening for sure if there's a Bones Highland discussion. I'm like, huh, I don't think that's going to happen.
I can address that.
Do it. I'll give you one second to do it. Go ahead.
It's extremely disappointing after what we saw in Chicago, where I think Bones made a case that he had a better game against the Bulls with his efficiency and his playmaking than maybe Russ had had in any game so far this season. Yeah. I'm not saying he's better than Russ, but because he brings a different element with his shooting out there, you could use him in different ways in the playoffs. And I've been calling him the skeleton key. Everybody else going with busy Bones, but I really felt like coming into this season, granted, before they got James Harden, when he was the backup point guard, Bones Highland was going to be extremely key. And then when I saw Marge, and even with James Harden, I thought, you know what, Bones is going to get that opportunity at some point. I didn't know, and of course I never wanted it to happen because somebody else went down with Russell Westbrook, but the opportunity presented itself. And he played spectacularly against Chicago, given how little run he was getting. And I thought he was up and down, but okay against the Pelicans. And then when James Harden came back, it almost looked like Bones, my guy, a young player, was frustrated and just checking out. Mm-hmm. The body language was really bad out there. It's like what we were seeing in more meaningful minutes, but in inconsequential time, during garbage time, whenever he was getting run once they got James Harden late in ball games. He just wasn't engaged at all. It was really strange to see. Like, I feel like he defeated himself a little bit out there, just with not taking advantage of whatever minutes you get, no matter how they're looked at late in a ball game. You still got to go out there and compete and show what you can bring to this team. So you never know. Maybe he'll get an opportunity at some point in the playoffs still. They'll find a role for him. But obviously, yeah, at this point, my prediction's not looking too good.
Listen, you've always been a big Bones Highland guy. I mean, last year, you and I were going back and forth when I said that he's not going to be in the rotation during the playoffs, so it doesn't matter.
I forgot.
And you're like, well, he definitely could be. He could have his moment. And I was like, it's not going to happen. Stop calling his name. He's not going to be someone in the postseason. And then once this season started, I was all aboard. I was ready to see what he's got. I said the Clippers need to get some youth. They need to get some energy. They need to start developing some younger players and get them involved. And so I was excited for what Bones was doing in the preseason. And then, of course, the Harden trade happened, and that certainly wrecked Bones. And then I was excited again. I said, all right, we certainly can see what he's capable of and doing, giving a little bit of energy. And Matt was saying it's not going to happen. And then, of course, he had a couple of games. And I said, look, there you go. There you go. Adam Oslin and I are on the same page. Things are looking good. And then we both look like idiots. So
he almost swung that game three against the Phoenix Suns. If that three-pointer didn't rattle in and out, he had 20 points in that game. Or, you know, if there wasn't that ridiculously missed take foul on the turnover by Russ, where Devin Booker was raising his hand, acknowledging he fouled. Bones almost won him that game.
So close, yet so far. All right, let's talk about the player that I actually wanted to bring up, and that is a guy that played, of course, 33 minutes. And no surprise that when this guy plays over 30 minutes, the Clippers win a ball game, and that is Ivica Zubac. 24 points, 12 rebounds, 3 block shots. You always say, get the ball to Zoo. When your offense is struggling, get the ball to Zoo. 7 of 8 from the field. Most importantly, 10 of 10 from the free throw line. Only 7 minutes off the bench for Plumlee. The Clippers need to play Zoo, and I want it to happen in the postseason. I just really hope that Ty Lue sees it as well, Adam, because it is not a surprise that the Clippers look better both offensively and defensively when Zoo is there, rebounding the basketball, and gain the Clippers easy buckets in the paint. And I know you agree.
I have been perpetually unhinged when Ivica Zubac is not getting the basketball, which has been often recently. I go back to the game against the Atlanta Hawks that they lost at home badly. He got one shot attempt.
Yeah.
And then they go out on that road trip, and this was actually right before it. Before that game, before the road trip, where I talked about Bones in Chicago, Coach Lou said they were intent on getting Ivica Zubac more looks. Well, over the next three games in Chicago, in New Orleans, and then home against Atlanta in that woeful loss without Trae Young, he attempted 11 shots total after they said they were going to get him the basketball more. I know it's easy to say that, and sometimes you just can't execute the game plan, and every game is different. But to me, it's a prerequisite for this Clippers team to be a contender. Ivica Zubac has to be involved, mm-hmm. Period. He's their fourth most important player. And every big man is energized when they get the basketball on offense to give you more on the defensive end. It's how it has worked since George Mikan, I'm sure. It's just the way it is. It's what you need. And Ivica Zubac goes for a season high of 24 against the Charlotte Hornets and is detonating. He had 10 and 7 in a block in the first quarter. And I think to myself, guys, there's an easy solution for getting more points in the paint and getting more easy shots. You have this 7'1" big man who's skilled with both hands, who's actually leading the league in percentage or efficiency on shots from 5 to 9 feet out by 8% over Nikola Jokic in those situations. From 5 to 9 feet, it's Big Zoo shooting 69% from there, and you're not even getting him involved. It almost feels like at times, I know it's not true, but it just looks like, is he being frozen out? Are they freezing him out? What is happening? But I think it's natural because for so long, when you have the star power with Kawhi and Paul George, guys like this get forgotten about. And then, meanwhile, they're progressing. He just turned, 26 or 27, I think it was. He's only getting better, but very quietly, behind the scenes. And he looked better than ever when they went 26-5 and they're running pick and roll with him and James Harden, and Big Zoo's averaging an efficient 13-10, and the Clippers were getting more points in the paint, and then he got hurt, and then he got sick, and he was just the forgotten man again, when I thought he was a made man. Finally, they were acknowledging that, regardless of who was on the floor, Ivica Zubac, with this starting unit next to three Hall of Famers, has to get the basketball here and there. He has to get looks because it's better for all of us. I have been losing my mind, if you couldn't tell, over the lack of respect that Pizza Zubac has gotten throughout most of his career. And some of it, you know, it's on him. When he gets opportunities, he has to take advantage of them. I didn't think he was very good last season in that series against the Phoenix Suns. But for the most part, if you're going to win a championship, there's no way Ivica Zubac will not have his fingerprints on that. It's the only way. So get him involved because you're going to need him.
So in the third quarter, the Clippers were outscored by 1 point. Zoo was 6 of 6 from the free throw line in the third quarter. Do you have any field goal attempts he had in the third?
One?
Yep. One. One.
It's maddening, man. It is.
One.
And what was it, a putback off someone else's miss?
It was a dunk. Yeah, it was a dunk.
There you go.
Yeah.
It's just there are easier paths to win ball games that they aren't exploiting because Ivica Zubac isn't being involved enough.
Yeah, it's not hard. It's really not hard. You got outscored in the quarter, and it's not a surprise that your center had one field goal attempt. I mean, you've got to get him involved more. Final topic, and then we'll close up shop. You mentioned earlier, so we'll close it out talking about it, and it's important that we bring up Zoo leading into this because Zoo certainly plays a big role when he faces off against the Dallas Mavericks, and all of a sudden, as we are recording, the Clippers would be the 4, the Mavs would be the 5, the Pelicans would be the 6, and let's still not count the Clippers at the 4 seed because I think it's very possible we see them lose these two games against the Kings and the Nuggets. Hoping that that's not the case, but very possible. And then they've got a couple of games against the Suns. So let's not count our chickens before they hatch. The Clippers could end up as far as the 6 seed. But
I agree.
Pelicans and Mavs, which team would you rather face? Because I saw you a little bit of back and forth on Twitter /X, whatever you want to call it. And I'm kind of conflicted here because people may say very obviously, like it's very obvious, let's face the Mavs. I mean, this is the team the Clippers have done well against in the past. The Pelicans have really just blown the doors off the Clippers for most of the matchups this season. And the people that are saying that, I don't think have watched the Mavericks recently because Kyrie healthy, Luka playing at the level that he's playing at, the element of PJ Washington in that starting lineup, and I think even more importantly, Daniel Gafford being a massive part of what they do both offensively and defensively. I think he had 5 blocks in today's ball game. This is a very dangerous team. And listen, both teams are tough. I think the athleticism for the Pelicans is what would probably make me say I want rather face the Mavericks than the Pelicans because the Pelicans can run up and down the floor. However, the inexperience of the Pelicans would make me say, you know what, maybe I'm okay facing them. So where do you lie? Because I'm probably 60-40, rather face the Pelicans, but it's a lot closer than people are making it seem.
And that's my only point. Somebody responded to me putting the yikes face emoji next to the standings once Dallas took down the Houston Rockets and Luka had 47, first team to beat them. And since the Clippers beat them, 2.5 weeks ago when they came back down 20, mm-hmm. Luka drops 47, Dallas wins. They're 9-1 in their last 10 games. Now they move up to the 5 spot because I guess they have the tiebreaker against the New Orleans Pelicans, who are in the same division as them. And there's a lot of PTSD with Clipper Nation, understandably. There is with me as well. And I just can't stop thinking about how they don't have just one impossible shot taker and maker now. Mm-hmm. They have two. They have two of the highest degree of difficulty shot makers of the top 5 in NBA history, maybe, with Kyrie now next to Luka Doncic. Hey, and that is hell to think about a third round against Luka, who I'm sure would be chomping at the bit to get to rewrite history or finally get his lick back against the Clippers, as Patrick Beverly would say. And now, as you were asking that question and phrasing it beautifully, I just flip-flopped again. I was thinking, yeah, well, you still want Dallas because they're a bottom 10 defense, and they're obviously flawed in that area. Well, you know what? If you go back to February 6th, the same point of time since the Grammy road trip for the Clippers, last 25 games when they're 13-12 and 28th defensively. Over that time, the Dallas Mavericks, they are 10th defensively. So they're not the same team they were when the Clippers saw them earlier this season.
Gafford.
They're not.
Gafford. I'm telling you, man.
Yeah. I mean, PJ Washington, like Kyrie Irving, it seems like things are starting to fit into place between him and Luka Doncic and where they like the basketball and playing together for one another. That game against the Denver Nuggets, that was one of the best games of the season with the Kyrie Irving left-handed floater from 15 feet out over Jokic to win it. They have something special going on right now. And if their defense isn't as flawed as we thought it was, in fact, obviously they've been playing better defense than the Clippers have the last couple of months. Well, then you're talking about a juiced up god-tier offense with Luka and Kyrie and a defense that is more than serviceable, and you want to face that team? I don't know. Sometimes you think the devil you know is better than the one you don't. In that case, it would be the Pelicans, and you'd rather face the Mavericks. But they haven't faced this Mavericks team. They haven't faced Kyrie Irving, who I know has taken some flack for some, I don't know, lack of clutchness in the playoffs since 2016. He's had some bad playoff series. He has. He's gotten clamped at times. I don't want to test that. I just feel like he's due for a big performance, and Luka's always going to show up. There's like a 90% chance in a seven-game series against Dallas, one of them is at least going to hit one game winner against you, right?
Yeah.
It feels like that.
Oh.
And I know Zion Williamson is Thanos and all that, but at least there's only one of him. So I don't know. I don't know. Honestly, I don't know. I hate both options. I'm leaning right now at the moment on March 31st at 8:39 p.m. I'm leaning towards I'd rather see the Pelicans, which I can't believe.
Yeah. I mean, listen, you look at the Pelicans and who knows what Ingram's status is going to be. And you look and you see Dyson Daniels is back, put him with Herb Jones and Jose Alvarado. Like, that defense is tough. And then the offense with Zion and what Trey Murphy can do and CJ McCollum. I mean, they've got a really good team that they can throw at you. But like you said, I mean, you just would much rather face the Pelicans at the end of a game than you'd rather, than face Luka or Kyrie, because Luka's already hit a crazy three against the Clippers when he was 35 feet away from the basket falling out of bounds. Like, the dude is just that damn good. And Kyrie, like you mentioned earlier in the pod, I mean, he's push shot from with his left hand from 20 feet away. Like, these dudes just can simply hit ridiculous shots. And as good as you might play defensively, they're still going to hurt you. So it's really tough. And I mentioned Gafford. I mean, listen, the guy went four straight games without missing a shot. And in one of those games, he had seven blocks against the Warriors. And a couple games after that, he was 10 of 11 against Utah, 24-7-5. And a game after that, he had two steals and five blocks. Like, he really brings a different dimension. What he and Lively are able to bring to that Mavericks team, along with the PJ Washington and Tim Hardaway Jr., can get hot as hell in a given moment as well. Listen, the Western Conference is going to be a gauntlet. I mean, if you're sitting here saying, oh, I'd rather face Minnesota than OKC, like, listen, Minnesota is still going to be a pain in the ass. You put Minnesota with OKC and Denver and Dallas and New Orleans, like, those are really tough teams, and no matter who you face in the first round, Adam, it's going to be hell, and then it's going to be even more of hell in the second round if you advance, and then it's going to be even more of hell as you keep going, because the NBA right now just has a lot of good basketball teams, and it's as simple as that.
I think, Brandon, you brought up the most important point there, because I just looked it up, because I knew where New Orleans was in this category. I didn't know where Dallas was. You brought up clutch time. I know the Pelicans just won a game down the stretch against the Clippers in the clutch where I think they had 7 points in the last 5 minutes and the Clippers had five. It was brutal. Well, they're 28th in clutch time net rating. Mm. You want to know where Dallas is?
Top five.
They're number three. Mm-hmm. They're number three, as you would expect with Luka and Kyrie on the season. I think that makes things a little bit easier for me to say I'd rather see the Pelicans, I think.
Yeah, and guess what happens in the playoffs? Clutch time. A hell of a lot of it. I mean, you're going to see a lot of every single possession matters in the final 5 minutes. And so, yeah, man, it's not going to be easy at all. Adam Osland, the man, the myth, the legend, back on this show. And we did not skip a beat. At Follow Adam A on X. What else do you want to promote before you go?
At Follow Adam A on X. Listen to the FNA show. Listen to Clips and Dip with Chuck Mockler and Will Updike. We got the YouTube channel too. At Clippers Podcast is where you can find it, where we stream all our episodes now and give each other funny and often inappropriate and mischaracterized nicknames.
And if you want to follow Adam, you sometimes will get the occasional picture of him beating the Postmates order to the front door, and they get a picture of him in the actual picture of the food. So you get that goodness as well, Adam. Don't worry.
With a fork in my mouth waiting for that Chipotle.
Oh, man, it's the best. Adam, you are the best. This has been the Ethos Clippers Podcast. Of course, you can follow me on X at BD Marcus, the Ethos Clippers handle as well. Give us a 5-star rating and review. The podcast always does help. For Adam, I am Brandon. Go Clips.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.